How does my royal lord? How fares your majesty?
You do me wrong to take me out of the grave. Thou art a soul in bliss, but I am bound upon a wheel of fire.
Very good, Susan.
I think you're wonderful, Fanny.
Really, Susan, if you knew all the important and well-connected people out there in the world, I'm sure you wouldn't find me very extraordinary at all.
I do not have to know them. They have not given me books or explained to me the names of the stars or show me where the martins come to nest year upon year.
I had a friend once did all the same things for me.
And we're friends too, aren't we, Fanny?
Yes, we are.
Now, can we read a play? And I insist on playing all the rogues and scoundrels.
Once more, Fanny begins to feel the blessing of affection.
I'm hurt. A plague on both your houses. I am sped. Is he gone and hath nothing?
What, art thou hurt?
Aye, a scratch. Married is enough.
Each morning they sit together in their room without a fire and lose themselves in books.
Art thou gone so? My lord, my love, my friend. I must hear from thee every day in the hour, for in a minute there are many days. Oh, by this count, I shall be much in years ere I again behold my Romeo.
Oh.
Good morning to you, ma'am. Henry Crawford at your service.
Oh, no.
Who is it?
Your daughter's from Northamptonshire. Ah.
Fanny! Fanny, a visitor!
Miss Price, I must ask your forgiveness, but my business takes me to Portsmouth, and I could not pass without calling upon you.
And tell me, Mr. Crawford, have you been travelling?
I have been visiting my estate in Norfolk, Mrs. Price. I thought myself to be swindled by my agent, but it turns out I am the crook.
Oh, surely not.
I have tenants, Mrs. Price. I have not done enough for them.
We all have our position in life to bear.
But if we may improve each other's lot, then do you not think that we should?
Good works are said to be their own reward.
Indeed. Mine were few, but perhaps a beginning. I am ashamed to say that I have tenants who up until now I have never even met. Cottages which I have never even visited.
Fanny is moved by the change in Henry Crawford. It is pleasing to hear him speak so properly.
There is still much to be done, however. I should like to make their acquaintance, each and every one. Oh.
Come along, children. Do not dawdle.
My dear Miss Price, I have no business in Portsmouth.
Mr. Crawford.
Forgive me, but my purpose, I will not pretend otherwise. My only purpose in coming was to see you. I could no longer bear such a total separation.
She wishes he had not said it. Yet she finds him altogether improved, more gentle, more attentive to other people's feelings. The next day, they walk by the sea.
Spring is coming, Miss Price.
Yes.
I think the flowers will be happy at Mansfield Park. You must miss it terribly.
I do.
You have been here a month, I think. And it is a 2-month visit, is it not?
My uncle talked of 2 months.
I know Mansfield, Miss Price. I know of its faults towards you. I know there is a danger of you being forgotten. If you wish to return at any time, give only the slightest hint, and I shall come down and take you back.
That is very kind, but I assure you...
I am perfectly serious. I must return to Norfolk soon. I remain unhappy with my agent. Should I go? Do you advise it?
Advise?
When you give me your opinion, I always know what is right.
No, do not say so. We have all a better guide in ourselves if we would attend to it than any other person can be.
When Henry Crawford leaves, it is more like parting with somebody of the nature of a friend. And though in one light she is glad to have him gone, in another she feels deserted now by everyone. The very next day, a letter arrives from Mansfield Park.
Tom is taken ill, dearest Fanny. We are far from sure that he will not succumb. Edmund is at his side, attending to his every need, and still the doctors say he may not live.
Miss Galbard now!
Is this the coach for Oxford?
Yes, miss.
Oh, Fanny, come home. Sir Thomas says that you must bring Susan with you, but, dearest, make haste. come home to Mansfield Park.
Tom Bertram is seriously ill, and Fanny Price has returned to the family at Mansfield Park with her sister, Susan.
Tom. Tom, let me lay this cloth on your forehead.
Edmund?
Don't speak now. You must save your strength.
If I die...
You will recover.
If I die, you must take care of the house. The family. You will do it better than me.
This is my brother Tom speaking.
They'll be safe with you. I'll just destroy them. Waste everything.
Tom, please rest. If you don't rest, you'll never get better.
I must be the luckiest man in England to be at death's door. And have my very own personal priest.
And here is a brother, not a clergyman.
Then as a brother... Pray for me, will you?
Yes, I will.
Forgive me, Fanny, but I had to come. Your poor cousins.
It is not long before Mary Crawford returns in haste, having heard the news of Tom's illness.
Such a fine young man to be cut off in the flower of his youth.
We are praying for his recovery.
Of course, but... He is not expected to live. Poor Sir Thomas. And Edmund is at his brother's side?
Yes, Tom seems only comfortable with Edmund near him.
I must speak with a bold voice, and I know you will not think it ill, merely honesty on my part. But wealth and consequence could fall into no hands more deserving than your cousin Edmund's.
Tom may not die, and... I truly believe, Miss Crawford, that even
Forgive me, Fanny. I merely mean to say that such an inheritance for Edmund would not be unfitting. The title, the estate. He has a noble heart. We both know that. Perhaps it is God's will that he should be the one to take Tom's place.
And so Fanny comes to see Mary Crawford's true nature. As one might glimpse a once beautiful flower, starved of nourishment in its youth, and grown into a binding weed.
What is it? Is it Tom?
Oh, my dear girl.
No, Fanny, it is not, Tom.
Father?
Sit down, both of you.
I should be with my brother.
I have something to tell you. It will serve to break both your hearts.
Whatever is the matter, sir?
I have had news from London over the last few days. I didn't speak of it, for I believed we needed all our strength to take care of Tom. Then, today, this has been written in the newspaper.
No, I beg you.
We must not fear the truth. It is with infinite concern this newspaper has to announce to the world a matrimonial fracas in the family of Mr. R, by which they mean Mr. Rushworth of Wimpole Street. The beautiful Mrs. R, who had promised to become so brilliant a leader in the fashionable world.
Oh, Maria, what have you done?
Having quitted her husband's roof...
Oh, no.
In the company of the well-known and captivating Mr. C, an intimate friend of Mr. R, and it is not known, even to the editor of this newspaper, whither they are gone.
Oh, it is a mistake, sir. It cannot be true.
Maria and Henry Crawford.
Edmund, I'm going to London to find them. Will you help me?
I'll be ready within the hour.
Thank you.
Oh, Fanny... Fanny, what are we to do?
Aunt.
Edmund!
Will you take care of Tom for me?
Of course.
Oh, Fanny, how could Crawford have done such a thing? And how could a man who once loved you desert you and in such a way?
It is of no matter now. All that is of importance is for you to find Maria and for Tom to get well.
I knew you cared of late for Crawford, but I loved his sister from the start. That is all over now and done. It can never be. Oh, Fanny, look after everyone until we get back.
God bless you.
And God have mercy on all our broken hearts.
Of the entire family, it is Aunt Norris who is most altered. The marriage between Maria and Mr. Rushworth had been her own contriving, and this conclusion of it almost overpowers her.
Of course, it must be said, sister, that had Fanny Price but accepted Mr. Crawford, as any grateful girl might have reasonably been expected to do, this would never, never have happened.
By the time Sir Thomas and Edmund arrive in London, everything is beyond hope. They have no choice but to return to Mansfield Park.
Edmund?
Fanny, I went to see Miss Crawford at the parsonage. I imagined it to be our last meeting.
Mr. Bertram, let us talk over this dreadful affair.
Miss Crawford?
What can equal the folly of our two relations?
There was but a moment fleeting that I hoped she might understand.
I do not mean to defend Henry at your sister's expense. He is a fool to have been drawn on by a woman he never cared for, and in so doing to lose the woman he adored. But as to Maria, she too was foolhardy in the extreme, to think she might be really loved by a man who had long ago made his indifference clear.
She saw it only as folly. It was the detection, not the offence, which she deplored.
He has thrown away such a woman as he will never see again. Fanny would have fixed him. She would have made him happy for ever. Had she accepted him, as she ought, they might now have been on the point of marriage. He would have been too happy and too busy to want any other woman. His subsequent meetings with Mrs. Rushworth would have ended in a regular standing flirtation.
I'm sorry, Fan, but I loved her. It was not her intention to be cruel. She was speaking only as she had been used to hearing others speak.
We must persuade Henry to marry Maria. I shall use my influence, and when they are married, she may recover her footing in society to a certain degree.
Miss Crawford, I could not have supposed it possible that coming in such a state of mind into your house as I have done, that anything could occur to make me suffer more.
My dear Mr. Bertram...
But you have been inflicting deeper wounds with every sentence you have uttered. There has often been a difference in our opinions, but I know now that I have never truly understood you before, and that the Miss Crawford I have dwelt on for many months past is but the Miss Crawford of my imagination.
Pretty good lecture, upon my word. Was it a part of your last sermon? At this rate, she will soon reform everybody at Mansfield and Thornton Lacey.
She tried to speak carelessly, but she was not as careless as she wanted to appear.
From my heart, I wish you well, Miss Crawford.
Mr. Bertram. Mr. Bertram!
Edmund sits broken by Fanny's side. Her friendship is all he has left. Fanny is returned to Mansfield Park. She is useful. She is beloved, and Sir Thomas holds her in increased regard.
Do you remember coming to us when you were but a child, Fanny?
I shall never forget it, sir.
We had it in mind to educate you, to improve your condition.
Please, sir.
No.
I beg you.
Let me speak. Too much has been left unsaid. I should not have allowed Maria to marry Rushworth. My instinct for what was right was clouded by other, less important concerns. My children are afraid of me, and the cost is that I have never come to know them. Had I done so, I might have been able to help them. But you, Fanny, you have proven true. Only you had the courage to follow your own heart, to know what was right, when the rest of us had lost our way.
Mrs. Rushworth could not be prevailed upon to leave Mr. Crawford. She hoped to marry him, and they continued together until she was obliged to be convinced that such hope was in vain. In time came a voluntary separation.
As you are well aware, sister, I am not one to shrink from my duty. Someone must go to live with Maria, and if it falls to a poor old, almost penniless widow such as myself, then I will bear the responsibility with dignity.
Oh, sister. Mrs. Norris left Mansfield Park and devoted herself to Maria in an establishment found for them in another county. When the news of Maria's flight with Henry Crawford reached Julia, it only served to increase her dread of her father and her home. She eloped with Mr. Yates. Maria's guilt had induced Julia's folly. Julia returned to Mansfield Park, humble and wishing to be forgiven. Yates wished most sincerely to be accepted into the family, and although he was not solid, there was hope of his becoming less trifling.
And what is the name of this one?
Myrtus communis. Myrtle.
Hmm. Who would have thought that every one of these green things has a name of its own? And who is this intruder? Stand still and face your death, Mr. Snail.
No, you mustn't kill him.
Fanny, he'll eat your flowers.
Let him have his dinner. Look, there is enough for everyone. We are blessed.
I shall place him in the shade of these leaves. And then, as he eats, he may also enjoy a particularly pleasant view of the house.
Tom gradually regained his health, without regaining his thoughtlessness and previous selfish habits. He had suffered, and he had learned to think. In time, he became what he always ought to have been, useful, and not living merely for himself.
Snow everywhere. Oh, it's such quiet.
All of the land grown white.
As the months passed, Fanny Price came to inhabit that position central to the family and the estate, which had always rightfully been hers.
Look. It's the tree where the nightingale builds her nest every year. Remember how you took me up here when I was 10 years old and grieving for my mother?
I showed you that fox's den. Look, it's the same. Just the very same. Only we have changed.
Not you.
For a time I did not know myself. Is that what love does? Makes us unrecognizable to ourselves.
The best of love, I think, serves only to draw from us all that we ever promised to be.
Should we go to the stables and find ourselves some horses?
We have not ridden these 5 months past.
It is the new year. Let us start it on horseback.
Henry Crawford might have won Fanny Price, but the temptation of immediate pleasure was too strong. He lost the woman whom he rationally, as well as passionately, loved. Mary Crawford became perfectly resolved never to attach herself to a younger brother again. She failed to find, however, amongst the dashing young heirs apparent of London, a man whose character and manners might equal those of Edmund Bertram.
Come, let us race all the way back to the house.
And as to Edmund, in time he came to heal from his attachment to Miss Crawford. And it began to strike him that a very different kind of woman might not do him just as well.
Fanny! When I said race, I never meant for you to win!
It was the match that Sir Thomas had hoped for, and Fanny was the daughter for whom he had always longed. With so much true merit and true love, and no want of fortune and friends, the happiness of the married cousins must be as secure as earthly happiness can be. Their home was a home of affection and comfort. They removed to the parsonage, and it soon grew as dear to Fanny's heart and as thoroughly perfect in her eyes as everything within the view and patronage of Mansfield Park had ever been.
Look, Edmund, look! Is it not the loveliest house in the whole country?
Yes, my dearest. I believe it is.
Now I am home.
Northanger Abbey by Jane Austen. Dramatised for radio by Dominic Power. Episode 1.
No one who had ever seen Catherine Morland in her infancy would have supposed her born to be an heroine. Her father was a very respectable clergyman, and he was not the least addicted to locking up his daughters. Her mother was a woman of useful, plain sense, and what is more remarkable, with a good constitution. She had 3 sons before Catherine was born, and instead of dying when bringing her into the world, as anybody might have expected, she lived on to have 6 children more. The Morlands were in general very plain, and Catherine, for many years of her life, as plain as any, She had a thin, awkward figure, dark, lank hair and strong features. She was fond of all boys' plays, and greatly preferred cricket, not merely to dolls, but to the more heroic enjoyments of infancy. Nursing a dormouse, feeding a canary bird, or watering a rose bush. Her mother wished her to learn music, and Catherine was sure she should like it, for she was very fond of tinkling the keys of the old forlorn spinet. She learned a year.
Catherine! Catherine!
Oh, she must practice, Mr. Morgan.
Perhaps, my dear, she would be better employed outside. I have my sermon to write.
Mrs. Morland, who did not insist on her daughter's being accomplished, allowed her to leave off. By the age of 15, she developed an inclination for finery.
Papa?
And she grew clean as she grew smart.
Oh, do look, Papa.
What? Ah, Catherine, that is a very nice dress.
Your daughter grows quite a good-looking girl, does she not?
Indeed. She is almost pretty today.
To look almost pretty is an acquisition of higher delight to a girl who has been looking plain for the past 15 years than a beauty from her cradle can ever receive.
Thank you, Papa.
From 15 to 17, she was in training for a heroine. She read all such works as heroines must read. From Pope, she learned to censure those who
bear about the mockery of woe.
From Gray, that
many a flower is born to blush unseen and waste its fragrance on the desert air.
From Shakespeare, she gained a great store of information, amongst the rest that
trifles light as air are to the jealous, confirmation strong as proofs of holy writ.
And that a young woman always looks
like patience on a monument, smiling at grief.
However, she reached the age of 17 without having seen one amiable youth who could call forth her sensibility, without having inspired one real passion. There was not one family among their acquaintance who had reared and supported a boy accidentally found at their door. But when a young lady is to be a heroine, something must and will happen to throw a hero in her way. At the beginning of the year, the Morlands received a visit from Mr. Allen, who owned the neighbouring estate, and his wife, who had a proposition for Catherine.
Well, February is always a wretched month for Mr. Allen, dear Mrs. Morland. He can hardly turn out to the end of the drive. Isn't that so, Mr. Allen?
If you say so, my dear.
Come in, Catherine.
Yes, Papa.
Here is some news for you, my dear.
It seems we are to lose you, Catherine.
Papa?
The luckiest chance in the world. Mr. Allen is much afflicted these days.
Lucky indeed.
Gout. The physician has ordered him to Bath for the waters. What do you think of that?
I hope he will be better soon.
No, no. About our proposal.
Mama?
Mr. and Mrs. Allen have been so good as to ask that you go with them to Bath.
Did I not mention that? I thought I had. Would you like that, Catherine? Mr. Allen will be taking the waters for much of the time, so with you, I shall have someone to be with, to the shops and in the evening and so forth.
What do you say, Catherine?
May I go, Papa?
You will find the world very different beyond the walls of our parsonage.
I should like it more than anything.
Excellent. We should be glad of your company.
When the hour of Catherine's departure drew near, the maternal anxiety of Mrs. Morland must naturally be supposed to be most severe. Cautions against the violence of such noblemen and baronets as delight in forcing young ladies away to some remote farmhouse must at such a moment relieve the fullness of her heart.
Try to keep some account of the money you spend. Use the little book I gave you.
Yes, Mama.
Do not let the Allens buy you things. They are very generous, but it would never do.
Yes, Papa.
Oh, come here, dear. And always remember to wrap yourself up very warm about the throat when you come from the rooms at night.
Yes, Mama.
Goodbye, Catherine.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Well, isn't this happy?
Yes, Mrs. Allen.
Is it not so, Mr. Allen?
Yes, dear.
Oh, well, We will know a good many people, of course. The Perrys are sure to be there. George Perry is a charming young man. I dare say the Skinners will return this year. They have three girls, all near enough in age.
It is now expedient to give some description of Mrs. Allen, so that the listener may judge how she will probably contrive to reduce poor Catherine to all the desperate wretchedness of which a novel's last volume is capable, whether by her imprudence, vulgarity, or jealousy, whether by intercepting her letters or turning her out of doors.
You can't conceive of how many good shops there are. Is it not so, Mr. Allen?
Yes, dear.
One can step out of doors and get a thing in 5 minutes.
But all one can say with certainty is that Mrs. Allen belonged to that numerous class of females whose society can raise no other emotion than surprise at there being any men in the world who could like them enough to marry them. The air of a gentlewoman, an inactive good temper, and a trifling turn of mind were all that could account for her being the choice of a sensible man like Mr. Allen. They arrived at Bath. Catherine was all eager delight. Her eyes were here, there, everywhere, as they approached its fine and striking environs, and afterwards drove through those streets which conducted them to their comfortable lodgings in Pulteney Street. She was come to be happy. And she was happy already. The important evening came, which was to usher Catherine into the upper rooms. Her hair was cut and dressed. Her clothes were put on with care. And she hoped to pass uncensured through the crowd. As for admiration, it was always very welcome when it came, but she did not depend on it.
Look at it, Mr. Allen. It's impossible. We shall be squeezed to death as soon as we venture in. Oh, I fear for my dress.
Well, my dear, you would take so long in choosing your dress for tonight. Now all the ladies who knew what they were wearing are already in place.
I am particularly vexed on your part, Catherine. You have been looking forward to this evening.
Perhaps we should turn back. The minuets are starting.
Oh, that is no matter. The country dance is still to come. Do you not find the crowd vexing, Mr. Allen?
Indeed it is, ma'am. As my physician has advised me to avoid all forms of vexation, I must leave you to fend for yourselves.
Where are you going?
The card room, where one may be pleasant and rational for an hour or two.
Oh, well, I dare say we shall fare better without him. We shall begin in the tea room. I'm sure there will be some acquaintance here. Come, Catherine. Take my hand.
Yes, Mrs. Allen.
Excuse me. Thank you. Don't hold so tight, Catherine.
Oh, look. Look.
There are two chairs.
Dear Mrs. Allen, we cannot sit there. The table is already occupied.
Aye, so it is, but we must sit somewhere. Go on.
Excuse me.
Oh, we're very much obliged.
How uncomfortable it is not to know anyone here.
Yes, my dear, it is very uncomfortable indeed. If we knew anybody, we would join them directly. The Skinners were here last year. I had counted on them being here tonight.
Excuse me, may I offer you some tea? Oh,
thank you.
We are much obliged to you.
This is your first visit to the upper rooms?
Yes.
Experienced visitors pursue seats with infinitely more ferocity. There is a delicacy in the way you command your chair that proclaims you a novice.
Ah, see?
The speaker was rather tall, had a pleasing countenance, a very lively and intelligent eye, and, if not quite handsome, was near enough to it.
How is my head, dear? Somebody gave me such a push that I'm afraid it is spoiled.
It is very well, Mrs. Allen.
You are to be complimented for keeping your head in such difficult circumstances.
Thank you, Mr.
Henry Tilney.
Mrs. Allen of Fullerton. This is Catherine Morland. Her family are particular friends of ours. I had hoped we would see some acquaintance here. Do you know the Perrys?
I have not had the pleasure.
Oh, they're very good sort of people. If they had been here, Catherine might have danced with George Perry.
Mrs. Allen.
What? Dear, help me take this pin out of my sleeve. I'm afraid it's torn a hole already.
Yes, Mrs. Allen. No, it hasn't been torn.
Oh, I should have been sorry if it had. The pin is very pretty, and this is a favourite gown. No, it costs but 9 shillings a yard.
Exactly what I should have guessed it.
Would you indeed? You must know your muslins.
Pretty well. I always buy my own cravats. My sister often trusts me in the choice of a gown. The other day I bought one for her and I was told it was a bargain.
I could never get Mr. Allen to know one of my gowns from another. You must be a great comfort to your sister.
I believe I am.
What do you think of Miss Morland's gown?
Very, very pretty. But it will not wash well. I'm afraid it will fray.
It will not.
You may laugh, but frayed muslin is no laughing matter.
I am quite of your opinion, sir. And so I told Miss Morland when she bought it.
Of course, muslin can always be turned to some other account. Miss Morland will get enough out of it for a handkerchief or cap or cloak. I believe we may go through to the dancing.
I can see I shall make a poor figure in your journal tomorrow.
You will not.
I'm pleased to hear it.
I don't keep a journal.
Well, then start now. How are your absent cousins to understand your life in Bath? I know exactly what you will say. Friday, went to the upper rooms, wore my sprigged muslin robe with blue trimmings and, let's see, plain black shoes. Appeared to much advance, strangely harassed by a queer half-witted man who distressed me with his nonsense.
I shan't say any such thing.
Shall I tell you what I would wish you to say?
If you please.
Danced with a very agreeable young man. Had a great deal of conversation with him. Seems a most extraordinary genius. Hope I may know more of him.
I shall not say that either.
Why not?
Well, we have not danced.
That is very forgetful of me. Come along. I mean to do better than George Parry.
In Bath, every morning brings its regular duties. There are shops to be visited, some new part of the town to be looked at, and the pump room to be attended. With more than usual eagerness did Catherine go thither the following day, secure within herself of seeing Mr. Tilney, and ready to greet him with a smile. But no smile was needed.
Oh, Catherine, look!
What is it, Mrs. Allen?
I'm sure that's one of the Skinner girls.
Where?
Now I think of it, she doesn't really look like her. How pleasant it would be if we knew someone here.
Yes, Mrs. Allen.
Oh, do look, Catherine, over there.
Where?
There goes an odd-looking woman. What a fright of a gown she's got on. No, over there. Do look or you'll miss it. How old-fashioned it is.
Mrs. Allen.
What?
Dear Mrs. Allen, she may hear us.
Oh, I hardly think so, my dear. Not among all these people. Such a queer cut, don't you think?
See, she is coming over.
Is she? Now you mention it, so she is. I cannot think that any harm has been done.
May we not leave?
Oh, just as you wish, my dear.
Excuse me.
Watch me.
I do not wish to detain, but it is Mrs. Allen.
Aye, so it is. We are just leaving, are we not, Catherine?
It is you. I knew I could not be mistaken. It is a long time since I had the pleasure of seeing you.
Is it? Wait. I know you. Is it not Mrs. Mrs.
Thorpe? I thought you must have recognized me, for I saw you point me out.
So I did. It's the luckiest chance, you being here. Catherine, this is Mrs. Thorpe. She was my most particular friend. When we were younger, we were inseparable.
We were never apart.
How is Mr. Thorpe?
I have been a widow for some years now.
Oh, dear, I had not heard.
And you, Mrs. Allen? I did not think you had a daughter.
Daughter? Why, no. This is Catherine Morland, the daughter of the clergyman in our parish, a very good sort of people. You have a family, I remember. A girl, was it not? Or was it boys?
The joy on this meeting was very great, as well it might be, since they had been content to know nothing of each other for the last 15 years.
My children are a great comfort. Three girls and our boy. John, he is at Oxford. Morland. Morland, that name is very familiar to me.
I have often heard my brother James speak of a John Thorpe, a friend of his from college.
Indeed! James Morland! He spent the last week of the Christmas vacation with us. Here comes one of my dear girls now. Isabella, over here.
Mama.
What do you think has happened, Isabella?
I'm too weary to think. There is hardly a genteel face to be seen.
Here is my old friend, Mrs. Allen.
Oh, morning.
And this is Catherine Morland. You remember James Morland?
I would have known you to be his sister anywhere. You are excessively like him. See, Mama, the complexion is exact.
Aye, so it is.
May I take her from you a while? Oh, come with me, dear Miss Morland.
How fortunate that we should meet like this.
Oh, it is indeed. I remember when we last met, you had a morning dress, tawny colours, I think it was. Oh.
I know we are to be great friends. As soon as I saw you, I felt an immediate sympathy between us.
It is kind of you to say so, Miss Thorpe.
Isabella, please. And I shall call you Catherine. The sister of James Morland will always be honoured by the Thorpe family.
I believe they are much together at Oxford.
They are inseparable. The friendship of two young men is a noble thing, is it not?
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Mrs. Allen, is she one of the Allens of Fullerton? I have heard your brother speak of them.
Mr. Allen owns a great deal of the land in our parish.
And the Allens have an interest in your family?
I think they must. They are very kind, always.
Your brother speaks of them as being delightful. I can see that by Mrs. Allen. Her manner is so unforced and easy. See how my mother dotes on her. I see your brother in you, the same sympathetic spirit. See those two young men over there?
Where?
There. Oh, don't look now, for it will encourage their conceit. One of them is Captain Hunt. He has accounted a tremendous flirt. Odious creatures. Now, have you made a conquest yet? Don't deny it, for I shall not believe you.
I have only danced with one man since I've been here.
Ah, I have found you out. What is his name?
Mr. Tilney. His Christian name is Henry.
My dearest Catherine, your eyes give you away. You are like me. Once you give your affection, it is unshakable. Are Captain Hunt and his friend looking at us?
I don't think they are. He is just now talking to someone else.
Where? Oh, yes.
Do you know his new companion?
It is Frank Lockwood, I believe. He is of no consequence.
Well, he looks very pleasant.
You will soon learn that appearances can deceive. The company here today is very shallow.
I am sorry that you do not care for Bath.
Not care for Bath? What can have given you that impression? We have not been here more than 3 days.
I heard you tell your mother you were weary of it.
Did I? No one says a great many things. To be sure, assemblies at Bath are very much inferior to those of London. Then again, they are infinitely superior to those of Tunbridge Wells. But it is true that I do not care much for society. I find most pleasure with my books.
I could never care for reading.
But what of Udolpho? You must have read that, at least.
Well, what is it?
The Mysteries of Udolpho by Mrs. Radcliffe. I felt sure you must have read it, for you are just like the heroine, Emily St. Aubyn. She is quite the sweetest girl.
Well, what kind of book is it?
The horridest thing imaginable. Poor Emily endures the most agonising tribulations. Everyone I know dotes on it. We all talk of nothing else.
I think I should like it.
I will lend you my copy. It is the least I can do for the sister of Mr. Morland.
The two new friends walked together to Miss Thorpe's lodgings, where Catherine was given a copy of The Mysteries of Udolpho, and thence to Pulteney Street. On parting, Catherine ran directly upstairs and watched Miss Thorpe's progress down the street from the drawing-room window. She admired the graceful spirit of her walk, the fashionable air of her figure and dress, and felt grateful, as well she might, for the chance which had procured her such a friend.
Oh, there you are, my dear. Did you enjoy your time with Miss Thorpe?
Yes, I did, very much.
My oldest friend here in Bath with us. I couldn't be more delighted. And you are pleased with her daughter?
Very much. She knows so much and has done so much. I enjoyed our conversation.
What is it you have there?
The Mysteries of Udolpho. Isabella lent it to me.
Oh, that was good of her. I am glad you have met someone of your own age. Mind you, she has fallen off sadly in the matter of dress.
Isabella, I think she dresses very well.
No, Mrs. Thorpe. When I knew her, Caroline Thorpe was one of the best turned out women you could meet. But now she dresses so queerly. Still, I suppose being a widow and having children means she has no leisure to give to clothes.
I admire the way Isabella dresses.
Yes, it is well enough. What a pity Mr. Tilney was not at the pump room. Did I tell you Mr. Allen made inquiries about him? It seems he is a clergyman. He lives in Gloucester. I cannot recall if he has any brothers or sisters.
He mentioned a sister.
Aye, so he did. And his mother or his father is dead. I cannot remember which. At any rate, it is quite a respectable family. Now, what is their home called? Northanger Abbey, that's it. It is quite large, I believe.
Northanger Abbey?
Do you suppose it is really an abbey?
I couldn't say. What sort of book is it?
Oh, the horriblest thing imaginable, Isabella says. She quite dotes on it.
Oh, look, Mr. Allen. There is Mrs. Thorpe and her daughter. Oh, good, good, they've seen us.
I should be glad to meet her at last. You've talked about nothing else for the past 24 hours.
Oh, Mrs. Allen.
Mrs. Thorpe. You remember my husband?
From your wedding, yes.
How do you do, ma'am?
This is my daughter, Isabella.
How do you do, sir? My brother's friend James Morland has spoken so much of you that I feel we are already acquainted. Mrs. Allen, that is a delightful cloak you're wearing.
I'm very pleased that you noticed, my dear.
I assure you I have not seen one I like half so well.
Thank you.
We are going to walk along the crescent. Will you join us?
With pleasure.
You must come with me, Catherine. There is so much I want to say to you. Give me your arm.
What a charming picture Isabella and Catherine make.
Aye, charming.
I am vastly pleased to see you. I believe your Mr. Tilney was in the church.
No, Mr. Tilney was not there. Why did you think he might be?
So many men were admiring you. I am sure some of them were quite in love with you.
I did not see anyone looking at me.
That is because where the heart is really attached, one does not care for the attention of anybody else. If only you knew how perfectly I understand your feelings. But I must say no more.
What do you mean?
Do not distress me by pressing the point. I have said too much already. Tell me, have you started Udolpho?
Oh, I have not been able to put it down. If we had not gone to church, I would still be reading it.
Delightful. Have you got to Valancourt yet?
I have. Well, he has just introduced himself to Emily and her father.
He is charming, is he not? If only all men could be like Valancourt.
The progress of the friendship between Catherine and Isabella Thorpe was as quick as its beginning had been warm. They were always arm in arm when they walked, and were not to be divided in the set. If a rainy morning deprived them of other enjoyments, they shut themselves up indoors to read novels. I will not adopt that ungenerous and impolitic custom so common with novel writers of scarcely ever permitting them to be read by their own heroine, who, if she accidentally take up a novel, is sure to turn over its insipid pages with disgust.
Oh,
which is it? You've gone quite pale.
I am got to the Black Veil.
How delightful. Let me see.
Oh, no, not yet. It's too dreadful.
Emily passed on with faltering steps, and having paused a moment at the door before she attempted to open it, she then hastily entered the chamber and went towards the picture, which appeared to be enclosed in a frame of uncommon size that hung in a dark part of the room. She paused again, and then, with a timid hand, lifted the veil.
Oh, Isabella!
But instantly let it fall, perceiving that what it had concealed was no picture. And before she could leave the chamber, she dropped, senseless, to the floor.
Give it back! I must know what is behind the picture.
It is worse than you can imagine.
Oh, tell me. Oh, no, don't. I would not be told upon any account. Oh, I am sure it is the Lady Laurentini's skeleton. Oh, I am delighted with the book.
And when you have finished Udolpho, we will read the Italian together. Here are more of the same kind for you.
Oh, let me see.
The Castle of Wolfenbach.
Yes.
Mysterious Warnings. Necromancer of the Black Forest.
Oh, I like the sound of that one. Are you sure they are all horrid?
Quite sure.
When I have finished Udolpho, I shall want to read it over again. I shall not look at another book till then.
When she was not reading Udolpho, Catherine was disappointed in the hope of meeting Mr. Tilney again. Every search for him was equally unsuccessful, whether in morning lounges or evening assemblies, at the upper or lower rooms, at dressed or undressed balls. His name was not in the pump room book, and curiosity could do no more.
My dearest creature, what can have made you so late? I've been frantic to see you.
I came as quickly as I could.
Forgive me, dear Catherine. I'm feeling persecuted. Do you see those two young men?
Where?
Over by the window. They have been staring at me for half an hour at least.
It cannot have been so long. It's only just 1 o'clock.
It is 10 minutes at least. They've put me quite out of countenance.
Oh, they are looking away now. Let us move.
That will encourage them. They are the most conceited creatures and think themselves of so much importance.
What should we do?
Ignore them.
They believe that we are incapable of real friendship and cannot be happy in each other's company without wishing for theirs. Let us prove them wrong. We shall be very serious.
Very well.
What are they doing now?
They are looking out of the window. They have seen something that amuses them.
They give themselves such airs. The tall one is the older of the Bingham brothers. Tell me, what news of elusive Mr. Tilney?
Well, all I know is that he cannot be in Bath.
Oh, my sweetest Catherine, it is too cruel.
You should not persuade me that I think so very much about Mr. Tilney, for perhaps I may never see him again.
I'm sure you would be miserable if you thought so. I know I am on your behalf.
While I have Udolpho to read, I feel as if nobody could make me miserable. Oh, that odious Montoni! How could he persecute Emily so?
It is the nature of some men to do so. Oh, they're trying to get our attention. Let us go and look at the arrivals. We shall be safe there. They're not coming this way, are they?
No.
I hope they're not so impertinent as to follow us. Charles Bingham is a notorious flirt.
It's all right. They're just leaving.
And which way have they gone?
They have turned left. I suppose they're going towards the churchyard.
Well, I am amazingly glad to be rid of them. Shall we go to Milsom Street? There is a hat there I'm dying to show you.
But if we only wait a few minutes, there will be no danger of our meeting them.
I assure you, I have no notion of treating men with any such respect. That is the way to spoil them.
Catherine had nothing to oppose against such reasoning, and therefore, to show the independence of Miss Thorpe and her resolution of humbling the sex, they set off immediately, as fast as they could walk, in pursuit of the young men.
Clear the way!
Ah!
Oh, there.
Oh, these odious gigs, how I detest them!
Catherine!
James! Is that you?
Mr. Morland and my brother! Oh, support me, Catherine, I feel faint.
Kitty! Miss Thorpe!
Well, what are you doing here?
Miss Thorpe, what is the matter?
Take my arm, Catherine. It is the most delightful surprise to see you, Mr. Morland.
How glad I am to see you again. And you, of course, Kitty. Thorpe and I are down from Oxford to stay for a week or so. We have taken rooms in your buildings, Miss Thorpe. Thorpe, this is my sister. Catherine, this is John Thorpe. As good a fellow as ever lived.
How do you do?
Oh, Mr. Morland, you have quite taken our breath away.
We had a notion for a change of scene, didn't we, Morland? Right, Miss Morland, how long do you think we've been running from Tetbury?
I do not know the distance.
25 miles, if it's an inch. Drove out of the inn yard at Tetbury just as the town clock struck 11. I defy any man in England to make my horse go less than 10 miles an hour. Ah, look at him. Did you ever see an animal so made for speed in your life?
He looks very hot, to be sure.
You're fond of an open carriage, are you, Miss Moran?
I have hardly ever had the opportunity of being in one, but I believe I should like it.
Well, I will drive you out in mine every day.
Oh, please don't trouble yourself.
I'll drive you to Lansdowne Hill tomorrow. What do you say?
Will your horse not want rest?
You know little of horses, I see. Nothing ruins a horse so much as rest. No, I shall exercise mine at an average of 4 hours every day while I'm here.
Oh, but that will be 40 miles a day.
40? Ah, 50, for what I care. Well, I will drive you to Lansdowne Hill tomorrow,
Oh, how delightful that will be. My dearest Catherine, I quite envy you. But I'm afraid, brother, you will not have room for a third.
A third, indeed. I did not come to Bath to drive my sister about. That would be a good joke, if faith. Morland must take care of you.
I shall be delighted. Now I must pay my respects to Mr. and Mrs. Adam.
Oh, I suppose I better show my face to our mother. I'll never hear the end of it. Well, you better come with me, Bella.
If we must, brother. Adieu, Mr. Morland.
So, how do you like my friend Thorpe?
He seems agreeable.
A little of a rattle, but there is nothing wrong in that. And Miss Thorpe, are you much in her company?
Oh, indeed I am. I love her exceedingly.
I'm very glad. She's just the kind of young woman I would wish to be your friend. She has so much good sense and she's so unaffected and amiable.
Oh, I am pleased that you like her. You never mentioned her when you wrote to me after your visit there.
Didn't I? Her family are all so fond of her. She must be admired in such a place as this, I suppose.
Oh, yes, very much. Mr. Allen thinks her the prettiest girl in Bath.
I dare say he does. And I do not know any man who is a better judge of beauty than Mr. Allen.
My dear, I worry that all this reading is not good for you. Must be bad for the complexion. I never could fancy reading myself. Oh, who can that be?
Miss Morland, here I am. Good as my word. How do you do, Mrs. Allen?
How do you do, Mr...
Thorpe, ma'am. Morland's friend from Oxford. Oh, come, Miss Morland, what's that you've got there?
It is my book.
Reading? No time for that. Bella and Morland are in a confounded hurry to be off. They want to get their tumble over.
What do you mean? Where are you all going to?
Going to? Why, you've not forgotten our engagement. We're going up to Lansdowne Hill.
Something was said about it, I remember, but really I did not expect you.
Not expect me? That's a good one. What a dust you would have made if I'd not come.
Mrs. Allen, what do you think? Can you spare me for an hour or two? Shall I go?
Oh, do just as you please, my dear.
Come along, Miss Morland. Throw your book away. You won't need it.
Goodbye, Mrs. Allen.
Look at the gig Morland's hired. Did you ever see such a tit-uppy little thing in your life?
We shall be quite happy, thank you, brother.
Lead the way, Thorpe.
Now, look at my gig. Neat, is it not? Town built. I've not had it a month.
It's very nice.
Curricle hung, you see. Seat, trunk, saw case, splashing board, lamps, silver moulding, all complete. The ironwork is as good as new, or better. We try to keep up, Morland. Now, Miss Morland, do not be frightened if my horse should dance about a little at first. Will you stand out of the way?
Young fool!
He's full of spirits, playful as can be, but there's no vice in it. Yes, Christchurch man, very good sort of fellow. Steady, Bruce. Well, he ran in for a few weeks till it was convenient to have done with it. I happened just then to be looking out for some light thing of the kind. Well, I chanced to meet him on Magdalen Bridge. Ah, Thorpe, said he. Do you happen to want such a little thing as this? Well, it's a capital one of the kind. Steady! Well, what do you ask, says I? And how much do you think he did, Miss Morland?
I am sure I cannot guess at all.
50 guineas. I threw down the money and the carriage was mine.
Well, I know so little of such things that I cannot judge whether it was cheap or dear.
I wasn't the loser. Poor Freeman wanted cash, you see. Might have sold it for 10 guineas more the next day. Jackson of Oriel bid me 60 at once.
Why are we stopping?
This is what we came for. Lands downhill.
Oh, it's very picturesque, is it not?
Yeah.
Have you ever read The Mysteries of Udolpho, Mr. Thorpe?
Udolpho? What thing is that?
It's a novel.
Oh, Lord, I never read novels. I've better things to do.
You would like Udolpho if you were to read it. It is so very interesting.
Not I, Faith. No, if I read any, it shall be Mrs. Radcliffe's. Her novels are amusing enough. There's some fun and nature in them.
Udolpho was written by Mrs. Radcliffe.
Was he? Well, I was thinking of some other book then. My novels are also full of nonsense and stuff. It's all very well for young women. Look here. Old Alan is, he's rolling in money, is he not?
What did you say?
The old Alan, the man you are with. Big estate, plenty of capital.
If you mean Mr. Alan, yes, I believe he is very rich.
Yeah. No children to speak, huh?
No, not any.
The famous thing for his heirs. He's your godfather, is he not?
My godfather? No! What can have given you that impression?
Well, you're always very much with them.
Yes, very much.
Well, I saw him in the card room last evening. He seemed a decent old fellow. He lived well in his time, I dare say. He's not gouty for nothing. Drink a bottle a day, does he?
Why should you think such a thing? He is a very temperate man. You will never see him in liquor.
But if he wants to drink, then let him, say I. What are you looking for?
Oh, I cannot make out James and Isabella. They should not be so far behind us.
Yeah, well, I dare say they've had a tumble.
You do not really think so, Mr. Thorpe.
Why, in that gig?
There's not a sound piece of iron about it. The wheels are worn out, and as for the body, fall to pieces after 10 miles. Oh, I'd not go 2 miles in it for £50,000.
Oh, we must warn them.
Ah, they'll only get a roll if it does break down. And there's plenty of dirt. The excellent falling.
Oh.
Get on with you.
You must turn back. If you think my brother and Isabella are in danger, it is your duty to find them and warn them.
Oh, Percy, the carriage is safe enough. The man knows how to drive it. I would undertake for £5 to drive it to York and back again without losing a nail. Now, get on with you. Whee! Here!
Well, here we are, Mrs. Allen. I brought Miss Smallland home in one piece, you see.
I hope you have had a pleasant airing.
Oh, we've had a famous time of it, did we not, Miss Smallland? We are both of a mind to try it again sometime.
I am worried about James and Isabella.
What for, my dear? They have returned home at least 2 hours ago.
Oh, they did not have an accident then.
They did not mention one. Oh. I believe they had a very pleasant drive.
There. What did I say? Miss Morland was full of unaccountable fears, Mrs. Allen. She would have had them lying dead in a ditch or some such. Well, if you will, excuse me, ma'am.
Send my kind thoughts to your mother.
Miss Morland.
Yes.
We must rattle about again soon.
Oh. Right. Well, my dear?
Mrs. Allen?
He seems very taken with you. Was it a very pleasant day?
We were jolted around a good deal.
What would you like to do, my dear?
I should like to sit with my book for a while.
Mrs. Thorpe speaks all the time of John's spirit.
Mm.
He certainly is lively. You are yawning, my dear.
I am a little weary.
I shall have to write your mother that you are tiring yourself out. Oh, you'll never guess who I met today.
Who?
Go on, guess.
I really don't know.
We had a great deal of talk together. She was wearing a very pretty spotted muslin.
Dear Mrs. Allen, who was it?
Miss Tilney, Mr. Tilney's sister. And by what I can learn, she always dresses very handsomely.
Mr. Tilney's sister? Well, where?
I went to the pump room with Mrs. Thorpe as soon as you were gone. And after, we agreed to take a turn in the Crescent. And there we met Mrs. Hughes, and Miss Tilney was walking with her.
Oh, did she speak to you?
Oh, yes. We walked along the Crescent together for half an hour. She said that her brother had told her about meeting you that night in the upper rooms. She would be very glad to meet you. She's a most agreeable young person. After she had gone, Mrs. Hughes talked to me a great deal about the family.
Oh, what did she tell you of them?
A vast deal indeed. She hardly talked of anything else.
Oh, did she tell you what part of Gloucestershire they came from?
She did, but I cannot recollect now. Oh. But they are a very good kind of people, and rich. She said that Northanger Abbey is accounted a very fine place.
Has Mr. Tilney returned to Bath?
Do you know, I forgot to ask.
Your brother and I were never in any danger. I would not have had you by for the world. Our opinions were so exactly the same, it was quite ridiculous. You are such a sly thing, you would have made some droll remark or other about it.
I promise I would not have.
As for my brother, he is quite in love with you after yesterday.
What secrets are you two sharing?
Oh, James. There now, I knew how it would be. You men have such restless curiosity. Talk of the curiosity of women, indeed. Be satisfied. You are not to know anything at all of the matter.
Is that likely to satisfy me, do you think?
Perhaps we are talking about you, so I would advise you not to listen.
Cruel Isabella! And I came over in the hope that you would be my guide in the pump room. I am sure you know all there is to know.
Oh, excuse me, but I see someone I think I know.
Adieu, Catherine. This brother of yours will allow me no peace.
And your pretty face will allow me none.
Your eyes are too easily pleased, Mr. Morland.
I would not have you think so.
Forgive me for asking, but are you Miss Tilney?
Yes, I am.
I thought so. There is a family resemblance to your brother.
Oh, you must be Miss Morland.
Yes. How glad I am to meet you.
And I you. Henry spoke with pleasure of his conversation with you.
Oh, did he? I remember he was most kind. I have not seen him since that evening.
When Henry had the pleasure of seeing you before, he was in Bath only for a day or so. He came to engage lodgings for us. Then he was held up on parish business. He returned the day before yesterday.
I felt sure he had quite gone away. He never comes to the pump room, I suppose?
Yes, sometimes. But this morning he rid out with my father.
Your father?
You seem surprised.
Oh, that is...